Welcome back to Starting to Scale. I hope you are well. I'm Emmy Faust. I hope you have had a really good week. How is it going with lockdown? It has been quite intense for me at times with four children and working and trying to do everything else like homeschooling. And on that note, I am going to be taking a little bit of time off over the summer to be with my family. And so series two of this podcast is going to come to an end at the end of July. So still got a couple of episodes for you. In September, I'm going to be launching quite a fun new project, which is going to involve video and podcasting and also helping you. So if you want to be involved in that, it's going to be free. Make sure you are signed up to my newsletter, and you can do that by going to emmyfaust.com/free, and I will let everyone on my database know what I'm going to be doing and how you can get involved for free. Today on the podcast, I am chatting with Andrew Waters. He is co-founder of Xander, which is a recruitment firm that supports startup founders and VCs with senior hires as they look to scale. We talk about lots of things. Obviously, the team is so important, especially when you're looking to raise money. That is what all the investors are saying. They really look at who's on the team, who's sort of got those strategic roles in the business. So hiring the right people is key. And we also talk about things like advisors and non-exec directors and why it's important to have those in the business and how you can get expert outside help from the early days without it costing loads of money. So let's get on with the show, and I hope you enjoy it. Today on Starting to Scale, I have Andrew Waters from Xander. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. I would love to know a little bit about when you set up the business and why you set it up.
Good to catch up. And thank you for inviting us on. For my sins, I've been in recruitment for kind of 15 plus years, and so was my co-founder. And ultimately, when you start that journey, you work with larger businesses and support them with their hiring. But the recent years, it's kind of moved gradually to the kind of a startup space, and it's become kind of more and more fascinating. The key hires that you support a founder or a VC with are just so much more important than, you know, a FTSE business. So when it came to the stage of taking the plunge and setting up on our own, that was where we wanted to kind of focus. So I guess the firm, supports startup founders or VCs with senior hires as they look to scale. Now, that could be a pre-series A business through to a kind of series C, D business. But ultimately, I think what made us, start the firm is we've always wanted to do our own thing, but also wanted to create something where we could be a connector in that space. And we know that making the right hire or getting the right advice makes such difference in a startup world versus a kind of a FTSE corporate world. And that's kind of why we ventured down that path.
I can totally see that. It's so important, isn't it? When you've got a small team, those people are so crucial, and getting the right people on board is really, could make it or break it. I think that the team is, one of the most important things. Just really quickly, could you just explain to the audience, in case there's anyone that doesn't know, you talked about Series A, Series C, Series D, seed. Could you just explain the difference between those points?
So I think, a startup from kind of thought or inception wouldn't have raised any money or any capital and will be bootstrapped. And initially, if you can continue bootstrapping that business until you need investment, then obviously you regain and retain more of an equity holding for longer, which is great. But if it's a tech product or a digital product, then it's likely you'll need some form of funding to enable you to kind of test product market fit and develop that product before kind of going to market. So there's obviously different funding paths along the way that you may involve. So it could be kind of an angel round that then would lead on to a seed round, and that seed round could be with family offices, could be with early stage VCs, and then the seed round would probably be you're getting to the stage you've got product market fit and you may have some you know, revenues, or it might be that you kind of you're on latter stages of the development of the product, and then kind of the Series A, Series B round will kick in, and some of the VCs would do a late seed round pre-revenue, but most would want some form of revenue kicking through, your kind of monthly kind of recurring revenue or whatever it would be, and then kind of Series A, B onwards before, you know, their exit planning strategy, and whether that be, you know, a private equity exit or a, you know, an IPO or whatever that would be. And clearly a founder has so many things to consider on that journey, and the people they need help with, you know, the types of people they need changes over that 5-10 year kind of period.
Yeah, we've had a couple of chats, haven't we, in the past, and we talked about that. We talked about how like non-exec directors or bringing in experts at different phases of that journey can really, really add value. And something that I was interested to talk to you about is, you know, we were talking about founders knowing their blind spots and where they could possibly have, you know, they need some additional help, and why it's important to use specialists or non-execs at different stages of the journey. And I'd love you to chat a bit more about that.
I think having set up a business now, I'm fully aware that I'm okay at some things, I'm good at some things, but I'm also terribly bad at quite a lot of things. And I'm also, as a founder, maybe more stubborn than I should be, and persevere with tasks that I shouldn't persevere with, when actually it could have been a lot more efficient and a slicker process and a better result at the end if I'd actually used a functional expert. And, you know, obviously we were an early stage startup. So I think as a founder or a leader of any business, knowing your strengths and weaknesses and knowing what your blind spots are is crucial, so that you can then focus on your strengths. I read a book many years ago called Strengths Finder, and it kind of focuses on your personality traits, and you can work as hard as you like on your weaknesses, but they're never going to be as strong as your strengths. So therefore, why not double down on your strengths and then build a team or functional experts around you that alleviates your weaknesses? So clearly, you may have these people within your network already. You may also be able to get these people from friends of friends or investors or kind of your own network. So you don't always need to pay for this. I don't think you need to necessarily, you know, a lot of people want to give back. So I don't think the fear around how costly this needs to be, I think has changed a lot in recent years. I think the desire for people to give back, the desire for people to work in a startup or support a startup is growing year on year. You know, when I started my career, you know, everyone wanted to be an investment banker or in a strategy house or wanted to work at a big four consulting firm. And that's changed, or work in a corporate and you know, get the bonuses, get the pension. Graduates nowadays and the shift is to be in an equity driven startup where you make more of a difference because you've got more ownership and more breadth in your role. It's very exciting. So I think because people want to give back, and there's functional experts there that want to support you and NEDs out there that want to support you, take advantage of it. So you've got different stages from inception to your first angel round, to your first seed round, to your second seed round, to your Series A, B, and then your exit plan and your, you know, whether that be an IPO or a PE exit, you need different advice at all of those different stages. So an angel round, it might be more pitch deck focused or presentation focused or business planning and strategic planning. At series, you know, late seed, Series A, it's going to be more financially focused around what you've delivered. And you probably need to be better on your KPI dashboard. It doesn't need to be just financial data. A lot of VCs will be actually looking at the non-financial data and how that's represented. And then, you know, subsequently, as you go on, you've got VC involvement. It might be around your M&A strategy, how you buy and bolt on acquisitions that add synergies to, you know, add to the top line and drive efficiencies. So there's different stages of things that you will encounter that you will need advice on. But likewise, you may also have an inherent weakness in marketing strategy, or in finance or in tech. you know, I'm particularly bad at tech, for instance. So I would actually, I would utilize an advisor or a non-exec or a functional expert in tech for the next 5 years. That what they provide in terms of advice will change, but I'm always going to need that to alleviate my blind spots so that I don't have to panic about it. And that person probably is a friend of a friend at the moment, or is a really good mate. It doesn't need to cost. And obviously the earlier the stage of your business, you know, the advice is incredibly important, because the dropout rate from seed to series A is greater than any.
So you talked about that, didn't we, about how that's a big drop off. And actually, I was just going to jump in and say, I do talk to a lot of my clients about getting an advisory board where they don't even need to pay for those people necessarily. Like you said, there are lots of people that want to support startups and want to see them be successful. And there are people that are happy to jump on board and help out at not without necessarily, you know, charging for it, aren't they?
I think if they're equity driven and they take a small stake, then it's win-win, because they're probably going to be on the journey for longer, and they're probably going to be, you know, more committed during that period of time. I think the key thing is that you get the top person, you know, the top 1% functional expert in their area. So if it's an ed tech business and you need some marketing support, then you need a CMO, a chief marketing officer that's in an ed tech at the moment, that's been through the real stage of growth, that can offer that free advice or that advice for equity. The key is making sure you choose the right functional expert or NED that fits culturally and challenges you and pushes you, but also is genuinely the best person out in the market or that can give you on the minute kind of analytical advice on where the marketing spend should go.
Yeah, that's so valuable, isn't it? But I mean, how do people go around about finding that? Is it just about approaching people and saying, I need your help?
I think early on you need to utilize your own network, because you probably can't afford to use a firm, and there's not many firms out there that do that. I mean, our pre-series A business supports founders of pre-series A businesses as being a connector, and we don't charge our normal kind of introductory fee for that. But I'd say you need to be at a certain stage before you need you need a non-exec. I think you can get free advice from your network or your friends of friends or by reaching out on LinkedIn to people who have already been where you've been, right? So if you've come up with an inception, you've done an angel round of an ed tech business, and it's not a competitor, and there's another ed tech founder that's already done that, and they're 3 years down the track, and they're now a Series B business, there's no harm in reaching out to that individual and you know, being honest about it. You know, there's a numbers game, and you've got to do it professionally. But why not reach out to people that probably are willing to, you know, some of them are willing to give back and have been in your shoes before. So I think it does take a lot of effort to find the best person. And I think the best way to do that is you know, by yourself, because you're so passionate about your business, you'll have the energy to go and do that. And it's such a priority. The later you get on, if it's seed or series A, then clearly using your time up on that, hopefully you've got some funds that you can actually then, you know, someone can do a search to try and find the best person on the market to give you advice. And as a founder who hires someone who changes their business and they pivot because it was the right thing to pivot, or as a founder that spends 3 months with a chairman and in those 3 months either pivots or actually is informed that this is just not going to fly, it's better to have 3 months and know that your idea isn't going to work, and then you can go back to a new idea, than not get that advice and be three years down the track with your family and, you know, all of that commitment, and it not work out. So I think, it's such a big decision. This is such a big thing for people. You know, it's what they go to bed thinking about. It's what they wake up thinking about if they get a good night's sleep. So, getting support around you and building, you know, as you get a bit later on, building a board that covers your blind spots and is collaborative and is all on the same page should drive the business in the right direction. And if it is equity driven, they're probably going the extra mile with their black book of networks and contacts as well. So it doesn't feel as lonely, which obviously is a big thing.
I was going to say that is a big thing. It's amazing, isn't it? But I mean, interestingly, you've mentioned that, and I actually spoke to someone yesterday who is working in our space, and she mentioned that as well. But I don't often hear people talking about the loneliness of being a founder. And I think if you have a business partner, obviously there's challenges that come with that. But if you don't have a business partner, it can be really lonely and overwhelming, especially when, you know, things are going really, really challenging. And actually to have those supportive people who've got your back on the board to challenge you, but also to support you, I just think that is so valuable. And for me, that could, you know, again, be one of the massive factors that could make or break the business. Because inevitably, those people, you're probably bringing them on because they've got experience of setting up, scaling businesses in similar spaces. I just wanted to ask you something. So when you refer to a NED, just so everyone's clear, that's a non-exec director. And I was actually asked this by someone the other day, and she said, "Oh, I'm not sure about a non-exec director because don't you have to give them a share?" So is that always the case? I mean, sometimes is it just a paid position? How does that work?
I think there's probably more flexibility around the job titles and this area than there needs to be. That, you know, this is not a listed business. This is this is your startup, and you can use different titles. So a lot of, for example, angel investors in startups become advisors to that startup. And after a 6-month period, for instance, that might convert to a non-exec role or a chairman role. But nothing needs to be formal initially with regard to shares and options. If they've, for instance, have already invested, they will have some share options already because they're an angel. And it may be a case that they give free advice and they provide brilliant advice and they help to utilize their experience to take the business to the next stage. And at that stage, they may go, actually, can we make this a bit more formal? And you might then grant more shares and convert them to a non-exec. But I don't think there needs to be too much concern around the formality around job titles at the early stage. I think you could use just advisor, you could use non-exec, you could use chairman, but ultimately you could give shares, you could not give shares, but ultimately you're trying to get people who have got skill sets or have got a network that you don't currently have that are going to take your business to the next stage. And you want to kind of build a long-term relationship with that person. And if that is equity driven and that different levels of share options are given after each year, or whether that's, you know, a financially motivated role. I think with NEDs, there is a perception. I think with a NED, you generally need to pay them a retainer, and there needs to be some form of monthly or quarterly retainer. And I don't think the NEDs in the startup space, the vast majority, are too worried about, you know, that figure. It's more about respect from both sides, respect for their time, respect for the founder's time, and that some people, you know, prefer to have that element of kind of business relationship. But ultimately, I don't think it should change what happens on a day-to-day or monthly kind of basis. You need to have people that are super passionate and are there when you need them, and are thinking about your startup when they're not working for your startup.
Yeah, that's just so valuable, isn't it? So you were saying Xander, you recruit people. At what point in that journey are you helping founders, recruiting people? You said before Series A, you're just introducing them and connecting them. And then at what point are you starting to help them, and what roles are you specifically helping them with?
I think the pre-Series A piece is around building a flexible board. So working out where your weaknesses are. If you are a sole founder, or even if there's only two of you, a chairman could be, you know, or chairperson could be incredibly valuable, because, you know, if you've got two people, sometimes it's good to have a third person, because, you know, it can help relieve any tension. The chairperson is there to be provocative and prod you and poke you and actually challenge you, but it's got the best for the business and the best for the founder's heart there. So I guess our pre-Series A business is around building a flexible board. So it's a board hire that's low hours or low days a month, but provides that functional expertise that you don't have. And then we also help with kind of funding intros for kind of Series A or late seed with that pre-Series A thing. But then I guess our core business is Series A onwards. And as a founder, you as you build a team, it becomes the most important thing in your startup. So obviously product and developing the product, getting product market fit, getting paying customers is all crucial. And none of this can happen without that great idea and that great product. But ultimately, the scaling will succeed or fail based on the team that you build. And from podcasts we've done and kind of other kind of networking events we've been to, founders, when they hire that first A-plus person, they're like, why on earth didn't I hire this person sooner? They are incredible. And they are saving me so much time. And actually, they're so proactive and resilient and hands-on. They're exactly what we need so that I can do this or this. So I think, you know, as we help founders early, you know, late seed, early Series A, cultural fit and breadth of experience becomes crucial. You know, a finance person also is an ops person. An ops person also needs to have kind of some procurement experience or sales experience. Everything's broader. And I think that's one of the things that's fascinating about hiring in this space. There's obviously a lot of excitement about moving into a startup. People are currently in corporates. They might be at L'Oreal and they're going to join a startup. Not everyone works in a startup. You are so used to your parameters in a FTSE or a corporate environment that when you go to a startup, yes, the role becomes more senior and you report to a board or you report to a founder, which is super exciting. Yes, your role gets broader. So actually, not only are you doing finance, you're doing ops, you're doing strategy, you're doing evaluations and pitch decks and stuff, but you're also doing things that are a lot junior. You're inputting invoices. Working out where to spend on Google AdWords and SEO and all of this stuff. So the smaller the startup, the more important cultural fit is, because the role will be broader and it will be more senior and more junior than that person's probably ever had before. So you need to make sure they're ready for it. And then as the team grows, the individuals you hire become more functional specialists. So I'd say, you know, up until, I don't know, 25, 30, maybe 40, the breadth of role is still exciting. But as you raise maybe Series A, Series B money, and you look to scale to get to kind of 100 staff, you need to have the best in class functional experts on these certain topic areas. And therefore, unfortunately, you're probably going to lose some of your earlier members who are your startup lovers who love being in a antiquated, broad role that's a pre-Series A business. And I think you've just got to sometimes be realistic about people as you scale, that you're not going to be able to bring everybody on the journey. The first few hires, you hopefully can bring most of them on the journey, but there's going to be some that when you start to bring in some processes and structure as you scale, because you need to, they're going to want to go back to that more entrepreneurial, startup, scrappy environment. And you've got to be prepared that you can say goodbye to them on good terms so that that person can go back to kind of what they love. And then your hiring strategy changes. And you need to get those kind of more growth mindset people, not startup mindset people, and the functional specialists in the certain areas. And I guess our functional specialism is more finance. So we support businesses with their first, you know, finance hires. And then as the team grows, we support them on that journey, as well as the non-exec piece at an early stage as well.
Finance, so important to get that right. I mean, I'm interested to know how you find these A class, you know, 100% people when there can't be, you know, loads and loads of them hanging around, and presumably they're in massive demand. How are you managing to tempt people away from their current jobs if they are obviously, you know, really well regarded and already doing an amazing job somewhere else? That must be quite a tricky, difficult situation.
It is tricky because there's obviously people that are equity driven and financially are handcuffed to a certain degree because there's an exit on the horizon in 12 months time or 18 months time, or they've just joined somewhere and they're really excited about it. So, you know, the key is not to try and persuade people who don't want to move. The key is having a big enough network that you know kind of all of the seed, Series A, Series B, CFOs, FDs, head of finances, and you know when exits happen so that you know when people are available, and you're keeping in touch with the individuals so that you're already ahead of the curve of when people might be considering their next step. You know, obviously really interesting times at the moment. And there's going to be loads of kind of changes, but, you know, kind of we've been there and done that over the years and have experienced that in the past. And I'm sure, you know, we'll get back to some sort of normality, maybe in Q4 of this year, and next year we can kind of be ready to kind of rock and roll. I think it's interesting, you know, I think a number two role in a Series C, D business that's been through that Series A, B journey, but as a number two to a CFO, becomes a very attractive proposition for a Series A, Series B business, because it's great for both sides. You know, one of the things that we do when we get our long list together is about assessment of that long list to get the short list ready for that founder. And the most important thing in the assessment is making sure that it fits for all parties, that the career logic of the individual they're going to hire, it makes sense and it's a benefit to them to join this company.
I get it. I totally understand it. Yeah. They're going to do it
and they're going to flourish in it and they're going to commit to it and they're going to be blood, sweat and tears to it. And, you know, there's no guarantee.
And they've just done it probably somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a really good approach for any startup is don't always need to hire the number one in their competitor. They can hire a number two or three or four in a corporate that has got the right personality trait and cultural fit to want this challenge, and it fits with their career logic, or a later stage scale up that's just exited to a PE firm and it's changed. The business has changed a little bit. It's 600 staff. And actually they were there when it was 100 staff. And they preferred that kind of feel, but they could do it in a number one role, not in a number two role. So I think that's really exciting for all parties. I think you've got to, when you're hiring and scaling, you've got to be realistic about people that 95% of them are good. They want to work hard. They will give it everything they've got. You've got to give them their best chance. You've got to give back what they give. So when you recruit, you've obviously got to assess them thoroughly. You've got to make sure you manage them in terms of the offer management and the referencing processes and the final interview process. But also you've got to think about your pre-onboarding, your onboarding, and your long-term planning for that individual in your startup. And there's no guarantees with these things, but you want people that are going to be with you for 3-5 years at least.
Yeah, that's amazing. Such great insight, Andrew. Thank you so much. It feels like there's so much content that you've shared with us, and I like to keep these podcasts to sort of 25 minutes, so probably going to have to finish it there, but I think we've probably got another podcast in us at some point in the future, because there's lots of things.
Is that code for I've talked too much?
No, that's a code for it was brilliant. Honestly, there's so many more questions that I would like to ask you, so I think I will do that another time in a podcast. But it's really, I mean, I know, having grown businesses myself, how important team is. And, you know, we didn't get to sort of Series A or anything, we sold before that. But team is so important. And I think you're so right. And just, it's about the fit, isn't it? And it's about using people that really, really are experts and specialists who can take your business to the next level. And I'm really happy that we met, because I'm sure that I can, in fact, as we were doing this podcast, I thought about someone who is exactly the person that you recruit that I'm going to introduce you to. So there you go.
Sounds good. Well, thank you again for inviting us on, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew.
Bye. All right, enjoy your day. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Starting to Scale with Emmy Faust. That's me. It has been great to have you listening again this week. If you know other founders that are looking to grow profitable, sustainable businesses, then please do let them know about this. And it would make my day if you leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you are enjoying from this podcast. If you want to get in touch, you can do that through my website, emmyfaust.com. And don't forget, I've got lots of great resources on my website. Go to emmyfaust.com/free. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to catching up with you again next week.